Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. Hartley, looks like you're back in the UK. We're not in Florida anymore. Very disappointing.
We're not in Florida until we are.
Until we are again. Yeah. One day. Well, this is kind of like the same topic of downgrades, because no offense to the UK, and you know, where I live is also kind of a downgrade compared to sunny Florida at times, mostly just from a weather standpoint. But it seems like downgrades is the theme this week, because our biggest news right now is that the iPhone 18 leaks that have been coming out and a few other products are being hit by kind of a hardware issue where there's just iPhone memory costs are quadrupling and there's a price hike going on, and we've got rumors swirling about the 18 kind of being more in line with the 18e and sharing components, which is concerning considering that the 18 and the 18e do have a pretty substantial price difference. So let's talk about that. Where do you want to start? Like, let's maybe talk about the news about the 18 kind of being, you know, the one that's going to start sharing some components with the 18e, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, so this is all driven by the surge in pricing that we have seen with memory.
And everything.
Normally, Apple is immune to this kind of thing because of its size. So like when we've seen chip shortages in the past, usually Apple has been big enough to absorb that. And it's, for example, it's TSMC's biggest client. So TSMC, Apple's chip supplier, is always very eager to please Apple. But the situation has changed because pretty much every major tech company is going after AI and is trying to build servers faster than they can. And this has driven up prices because there isn't enough memory. So this is now affecting even Apple, and it referred to this in its latest earnings call. And this is affecting a whole series of products. And it also relates to things like flash storage. It's driving up component prices across the board because even manufacturers themselves are dependent on these chips. So we are expecting it to impact a whole lot of products. But most recently, we have heard rumors related to the standard iPhone 18, which is interesting because we're not expecting to see that device this year. This will be the first time we don't get a mainline iPhone since the beginning of the iPhone, in fact.
Yeah, so a lot of the reports are like, okay, it's going to be a downgrade in components and it's going to be delayed. But that delayed needs an asterisk next to it because it's not really delayed from, it's delayed from normal. But we've been talking about this split release for a year now or for a while. So it's not like it's delayed from the initial reports that Apple is planning to do this. The only reason why we have to kind of say that, I guess, is because Apple hasn't officially come out and said there is no iPhone 18 coming this year. These are just the reports that we've heard, and they're pretty substantial and reports that seem to be corroborated by a lot of people in this industry that do this. So really delayed kind of makes it seem like it's a negative, but the whole plan was that this was not going to come out until the spring of 27, correct?
That is right. But I think that when we first heard those reports, we were imagining a bit of a different rationale. And that's still true, which is that with the introduction of the foldable iPhone this year, we're expecting a lot of new iPhones. So we'll get three new iPhones in the fall, being the 18 Pro, the 18 Pro Max, and the foldable iPhone. And then in the spring, get the 18e, the 18, and the iPhone Air 2. So we get three and three. Now, arguably, that has some good reasoning with regards to kind of prolonging the enthusiasm around these devices, separating it out so that there's more of an even distribution when it just comes to marketing. and telling consumers that these new devices exist. It's easier to market three at once and then another three several months later. But it's the whole spin that this is actually in large part related to these shortages that is so interesting and is a new piece of information, because it raises the question of, if it were not for these shortages, maybe we would be getting the iPhone 18 this year, and maybe it would actually look quite different to how it actually does. So it puts a bit of a new perspective on the reason behind that delay. Because if Apple releases the iPhone later, it means that there is less of a surge on the purchases of that entry-level iPhone, or well, that mid-level iPhone, I should say, in September, which is essential, because it means that then there's more memory available for the Pro models. We're not going to see an uptick in iPhone 17 sales in September, and that is what Apple is trying to avoid. So that is one part of the logic here.
You might see an uptick if I can convince everyone who is considering an iPhone 17 but wants to wait for the 18, just go ahead and buy the 17, because all reports basically are making it seem like this isn't going to be as good, which is a shame, because how many times have we said the 17 is probably the phone of the year because of how good it is? It's nearly perfect for everyday users.
It will be a shame, but I think it's also important to contextualize what we mean by downgrade. So the way I'm reading this is it's a downgrade over what we would normally expect an upgraded standard iPhone to look like. I don't think it means that it is a downgrade across the board over the 17. It doesn't mean we're going from a 17 back to a 16 in terms of hardware, but it means that what we would normally expect is going to take a step back.
Wouldn't they just phrase it then as not a non-major upgrade, or like not a huge, you know, a very small, like, but when you say downgrade, I think the phone is getting worse in the areas that specifically have been highlighted, which is display specifications.
It's a matter of perspective.
So downgrade.
Let's look at a specific example. So we are still expecting the iPhone 18 to feature the A20 chip. So that will be an upgraded chip over the iPhone 17. That is undeniably an upgrade. It will be newer technology. It will have more transistors. It will be more powerful. It will have a higher clock speed. However, it's quite likely, for example, that it could be a downgraded version of that chip. So it could be a 4-core GPU version. So right now, we have the A19 chip across the whole iPhone lineup. So we've got an A19 in the 17E, an A19 in the 17, and then an A19 in the 17 Pro. But these there are three different kinds of the A19. One has a 4-core GPU, the middle one has a 5-core, and the Pro version has a 6-core. So Apple could just drop that 5-core version down to a 4-core version. So ostensibly, the GPU is downgraded, but the actual chip technology is still an upgrade. So that is how I am seeing these reports of a downgrade. That's kind of how I'm understanding it. It's still a new device. There will still be things that are better, but individual aspects may not be quite where we would expect them to be.
Listen, it's easy to distinguish this. If the chip is worse performing than the chip that was of the previous generation, then that's a downgrade. No matter what you call it, if you call it the A20 Super Pro Max, but it doesn't outperform the A19, then that's a downgrade. If it's in line with and or slightly better, but there are better versions of the chip that Apple just didn't give to that phone, that's not a downgrade. That's just a non-upgrade, or, you know, just like a lateral move or a slightly better version. But that then the phrasing gets weird on these reports, and I wouldn't call it a downgrade unless it does not outperform the current model. So are you expecting the chip to not? Well, that's the thing that I would like to know, because it doesn't really say in these reports, unless I missed it.
For example, if single core performance is better, multi core performance is better, but GPU performance is worse,
well, then it's a downgrade depending on how you use your phone.
Exactly. And that is how I think that this should be looked at. I think it wouldn't be overly surprising if we get a display that is slightly dimmer as well. But then the iPhone 18E's display gets brighter and we get Dynamic Island on the iPhone 18E. So just because we're expecting it to share components, that works both ways. That could also mean that the iPhone 18e is going to get considerably better.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. That's the reason why these reports are weird, because the phrasing is meant to, I feel, instill panic in people. But if they share components and that makes the iPhone 18e better from what it was before, as long as it's not better than the 18, then it's fine. That's okay. If the 18 gets a dimmer display, that's okay, but it can't get dimmer than the 17, then that's a downgrade. Like that.
I think it probably will get dimmer than the 17.
Well, that's a bummer. Don't make there it worse. You have such a good phone.
There are some aspects just that there's going to be. There's going to be many. I think it would be easy to overplay this, but I think definitely, if I was to hedge a bet, I would say that we'll lose a GPU core, we won't be getting 12 gigabytes of memory. And I imagine that the display is going to lose some brightness. I don't know that there'll be a whole lot more to it than that, but that is enough. And another part of the logic behind delaying this is if the iPhone 17 has been on shelves for 18 months, and then an iPhone 18 comes out, there will be renewed interest in that device compared to if it just came at 12 months, because it will feel fresher, it will feel more earned. And consumers are going to be more likely to do that. And there is another argument here, which is that the whole reason why Apple is doing this is to keep the price the same. So the alternative would be that it delivers a full upgrade across the board with nothing that is considered to be a downgrade, however we're looking at that, but it comes at an extra $100. And this device is so clearly important for the mid-level, and we have the pro models for people that want to spend more, that price stabilization is really important at this level. So there's a lot going on here as to why this is happening, but overall I think it is a good decision. It's better from a marketing perspective, it's better in terms of price. This is probably the device that would make sense to downgrade. You can't really downgrade an E model much more. We certainly wouldn't want to see the pro models getting downgraded.
I think it makes sense.
It's just a shame, and it's not actually Apple's fault.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
I think it is Apple's fault in a way. I feel like once they changed the SE name and gave it a number, you kind of screwed over the base model iPhone, because now people are comparing it to the model that is the E. So like 17E would get compared to the 17, which the 17 is great. But now if you start upgrading the 18 to share components with the or the 18E to share components with the 18, and that gets better, you're blurring the lines even more. So, you know, from $599 to what's the main phone, $799?
Yes.
Just merge the two. Merge the two, make it $699, absolve it.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. If there was no iPhone 18E and the iPhone 18 dropped in price a little bit over what we were expecting, but it does come with downgrades, would that be more palatable to you?
Yes, it would. But here's the problem. It would be fine if they didn't already give us a perfect phone with the 17. You gave us promotion. You can't take that away now. You can't. Unless you're just, I mean, you can, but that's not.
No, I think that's not, one that's here
not
to
cool.
stay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have to eat the cost.
That's a core feature. Whereas what other little hidden specifications like GPU cores and brightness, you won't be hugely aware if your display has lost 200 nits of peak brightness.
No, but that's still
so. it's kind of hidden away. So I imagine that is where we will see this.
That's a genuine question. I don't know.
If it's the same display panel as the iPhone 18e, then economies of scale would suggest probably yes.
Sure.
And if component prices are being driven up across the board, cost savings need to be made in certain places. I mean, it's also worth saying here that by next year, memory costs are expected to account for 45% of the manufacturing cost of an iPhone. Today, it is only 10%. So that is a huge increase in costs. I would not like to be paying whatever that works out to, around 30% more for my iPhone. So this does present a problem. And this is where we are.
I mean, iPhones don't really need a lot of, or are we talking memory in terms of RAM or memory in terms of SSD or both?
Like this storage? Is predominantly memory in terms of RAM, but it also does affect other component prices.
Right. I mean, I meant, is this affecting like memory and then storage are included in that or just the RAM? So it's just the RAM. That's because I know both components in the world today are so largely just overpriced and going through a surge because of the supply. So here's the thing. You could lower the RAM on the base model. You could take away Apple Intelligence features on the base model. That could help. Maybe you offer two versions where one, you pay a little more and you can get Apple Intelligence on the base model. And the other is for those who don't care. I know Apple
wouldn't do that. I think that would be a disaster for probably not least Apple's stock price, especially with so much of a push around AI. If Apple was seen to withdraw from that race, I think that would be pretty disastrous.
I mean, I know they wouldn't do that, so I say it in jest, but like, here's the thing. Aside from Apple Intelligence, which we're told Apple needs at least, what, 8 gigs for it to run at its current form? Yes. It might need more with what they're planning on doing. The rest of the phone does not. We don't need that much. The software and the hardware are so well optimized together that have you had any problems with any other day-to-day stuff if you just had 8 gigs of RAM and you weren't running Apple Intelligence? Do you run enough Apple Intelligence is my next question, but
no. But no, I hope one day that will change. But
I hope so too. Hopefully in a month we'll start experimenting with a little bit of it.
Yeah, not that long now. Hopefully,
yeah.
Maybe one day. Who knows?
We're just a few weeks away from WWDC invites going out, are we not?
Yes, it should be. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just dejected about it because I just don't know what we're going to see or when. Who knows if it'll actually be in that first beta or not?
Well, check out my video that's going to be coming out later today where I go over what's currently rumored for iOS 27. But back to these prices, MagSafe is another thing that I keep seeing being dangled out there and dropped. Why does Apple insist on killing MagSafe? They've done it before, and now they want to do it again. Why? We all actually like this feature.
So I don't think that this is rumored for the iPhone 18 in particular. This is more of a potential feature removal for the future. And
just put it on the e-models and now you take it away.
the report was that Apple is just considering removing it. I think it is plausible. The reason it's plausible is because it looks like the foldable iPhone won't have it. So your $2,000 iPhone won't have it. And that would suggest that it's no longer a core flagship iPhone feature. And many iPhone 16e users who didn't have MagSafe simply bought a case with a magnetic array in and just use that instead. So if MagSafe became exclusive to the Pro models and was not present on the entry-level models and Apple's continued to sell its MagSafe cases, so if you want MagSafe on an entry-level model, you just need to use a case, there would be outrage about it for a week and then everyone would get over it. Because as much as I love MagSafe, I'm a Pro user. How many people use MagSafe, use one of those entry-level models, but don't use a case and would refuse to use a case and would not be upsold to a Pro model? It's a relatively small slice of people. And I could imagine that if Apple is trying to free up internal space and also to increase its supply of magnets, which is an expensive component, that is also possible in the future, but not from the pro models, it doesn't look like.
This pains me as a naked phone user. I need all my naked phone users out there to rise up and fight against the tyranny that is the magnet removal of Apple. Can they make like a little accessory that's just the MagSafe array that we can just kind of somehow get onto the phone that isn't a case? Like, that's what I need.
Well, I mean, you can buy things like that, adhesive ones. There's plenty of third-party ones on Amazon.
I guess I've never looked into that.
They're not as good as obviously built-in magnets, but they're fine. And that's why I could see that potentially happening one day. And also, it's just worth noting that, you know, when Apple pitched MagSafe to us back in 2020 with the iPhone 12, it showed all these accessories. We had the MagSafe battery. We had that weird leather pouch that showed the time through. Obviously, every MagSafe case, we had the MagSafe Duo. And it was presented that this was going to be a full ecosystem. Well, really, other than maybe docks that you may have on your desk, like a charging dock, and maybe chargers you have in your car or magnetic power banks, it's definitely not as much of an ecosystem per se as Apple initially presented it to be. And Apple itself does not really make any of those accessories anymore, other than the MagSafe charger, which I don't think many people even use. So I could see them pulling back from that.
Well, I use MagSafe accessories every day. Like, you, I would imagine a lot of people
Apple.
Do.
They're
I don't
not,
use
Apple.
No.
But they're not Apple
first
Apple party
made
ones.
Terrible
and the fact
ones.
That,
right.
And the fact that Apple's pulled away would make it easier to justify. And it may indicate what it thinks about MagSafe. I think that it still values it as a feature. But if it needs to make cutbacks, if it wants to save more internal space, then I can understand why that may be becoming a question.
I don't know. I feel like Apple introduced MagSafe into the iPhone with the thought of making good, you know, ecosystem first-party products, but maybe it wasn't a huge priority because they thought, well, the third-party game is going to be strong here, so it's fine. And if we do happen to come out with good ones, great. But if not, we still... Is there a licensing thing like MFI? Is there a MagSafe licensing that they get money for?
Yes.
Yeah, so then,
but
I mean...
It's opened
that's,
up to
that's
third parties
I,
now, so it doesn't really matter anymore.
Because MagSafe is... I haven't looked into this, so I could be, this could be really dumb on my half, but, you know, whatever. There was a time where, you know, you could only get the faster wireless charging through MagSafe. Has Apple opened that up? Like, if I just wanted to use a regular Qi charger.
Well, now it's Qi 2. Now it's Qi 2.
Right.
So it's a standardized. So
so then, I don't know. I don't want to buy a case. That's my biggest thing.
But then you would buy a pro model, and that's kind of the point. That
no, but I want the Ultra. No, but I want the Ultra. That's what I'm mad about. I'm still salty about this.
Yeah, well, the Ultra is a bit of a different question because the Ultra is going to be missing the telephoto camera and the action button and a whole bunch of other features. Then it's a completely different situation.
I know. We were talking about the 18, but you got me all mad about the Ultra. And here's the thing that pisses me off, real quick, just about the Ultra. If I could just throw this in there, all the rumors suggest that we're not going to get these things, and that's fine if it's just not like technologically possible. But when other companies have been doing this for years and have been able to put in other things, whether or not they're as good is not necessarily my point. But like, you got to be able to figure out a way. Like, if Samsung's able to put in three or four cameras on a foldable and make it slim, you have to be able to figure out a way to put your types of cameras or at least a slightly modified version. I'd rather have a slightly lesser quality telephoto lens than the pro model of that year, if it means that it could fit into the phone and I would still have it, as opposed to not having it at all. Apple has to stop doing this whole thing of like, well, if we can't do it our way, we're just not going to do it at all, because then it just dilutes the product that you're trying to put out. You're not going to get anyone interested in this phone if you're making it worse than other phones that are cheaper. You're just not going to. And it's going to fail just like the Air. I'm sorry. I'm already going to come out and say it. I think it's going to fail just like the Air. And that pains me because I want it to do well. And I'm going to be a user of it, and I'm sure we're all going to like it, but it's not going to be mass appealing. It's just not going to be if you're going to dilute it. It's just not going to be. I hope I am wrong. I really do.
I agree. I think the first generation model probably will not be overly successful, and it will be a little bit stark with the features that are missing. But I imagine by the time we get to the third generation, a lot of these bumps will have been smoothed out.
Totally fine. 100% agree with you. Do we get to a third generation is my concern, because the iPhone Air, I think, is a good phone, needs a couple of updates, and it'll be perfect. There were really heavy rumors that we might not even get to the second one. We are going to get to the second one no matter what, but I don't think we're getting a third one. And that's usually once you start finding your stride, just like you said with the Ultra. I don't think we're getting a third one.
The difference is that the iPhone Air can disappear and it won't matter because the sales are so low and it sits in the middle of the lineup, whereas the iPhone Ultra can't do that because the iPhone Ultra is a lot more important to Apple, because it's a new form factor. It will be the first truly new iPhone form factor ever. But also, it's a way of driving up the price of the iPhone. And that is why it is so important, because go forwards 10 years, the iPhone Ultra should be the entry-level iPhone at $2,000 with inflation. That is how it works, that you introduce a new model above and you gradually discontinue the models below. So there is no way that the iPhone Ultra is going to...
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
To disappear.
Do you know what this smells to me right now? It smells to me like Vision Pro. Vision Pro is supposed to be this insane piece of technology that changes the way we do. It was supposed to be the next iPhone, and they can drive up the price because of how great all this hardware is compared to. I know they don't have their own first party, standard to compare it to, but there were other things on the market already for many, many years that were doing just fine at a $500 plus, or minus price point. And no one bought the Vision Pro. And now it's been reported that it's pretty much dead for a while, if, not in, indefinitely. We have no idea what's going to happen with it. I feel like we're following the same footsteps. It's going to be really good because the Vision Pro is a really good product despite its flaws. I think it's a really, really good product for what it is. It's too expensive. It's too heavy. What's the Ultra going to be? Too expensive, not enough pro features. And the only way, like you just said, that it's not going to fail is if they can drive up the price point, make it so it has interest, add these new features, a new form factor, and then you discontinue the models below that. Is Apple going to discontinue the Pro model in favor for the Ultra? You really think that's going to happen sometime soon?
I think eventually that could happen. I think eventually every iPhone in the lineup could be a foldable. I think that is a long way off.
That is a long way.
I'm talking long-term future.
I just don't know that there's a world without.
I agree that it could potentially be a bit of a fumbled launch like the Vision Pro. But I think the difference is that the Vision Pro is an all-new device that is a lot harder to sell, whereas there are plenty of people who are not interested in the Vision Pro that would quite like a foldable and will be intrigued enough to go and check one out in an Apple store. It's still an iPhone, I think we'll see long-term popularity.
And that's the thing where I can argue against myself is like, well, the only reason why it won't fail as quickly as the Vision Pro or the iPhone Air, but more so the Vision Pro here, is because it is, at the end of the day, an iPhone, and it's not something that we're plastering on our faces. It might be really close to our faces because that's how we look at our phones, but it's not on our head where we can't interact with the rest of the world at any moment in time. So that's where I can make that argument against myself. But listen, I'm not trying to be negative. It always comes down to this. I'm not trying to be negative. I want it to be a good product. I want it to do well. I want it to have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 generations. Where's the Samsung? We're on the 7 right now. They're going to get an 8. I want it to get to 8 generations, and I want it to get better and better and better, like how Samsung's has gotten better and better and better. I just don't know if Apple and the board has the patience to see that through. I hope they do. And I also don't see a world where we have no slab iPhones, at least not for another 10 years. I think the likelihood of there being no more phones in the world before we get rid of a slab phone completely is slightly higher. Like if Apple figures out the glasses and it makes it amazing to where nobody wants to start using phones anymore, I think that has a better possibility than no slab phone happening for a while. I don't know why. I just feel like slab phones are here to stay.
But you can still have a phone in that form factor, which is why a foldable works. I mean, if you could, if the entry-level iPhone in 2040 is an iPhone Air, but it folds in half, I mean, that's a pretty great entry-level device.
Oh,
that lets you do everything you can do today.
That's what Apple should have done now. That's what Apple should have done now, honestly. They should have started with something that was a normal form factor that folds in half first, like the Flip. Or do them both at the same time. I mean, I know Samsung didn't do that, but it wasn't that long after. I don't know how many generations it took. Not that many, right? Like, we're on the... Did they do it at the same time? I mean, there are seven generations. There's a Z Flip 7.
I think that's just for marketing purposes.
Just the naming, right. I feel like when the first foldable came out from Samsung, it was the normal fold first. And then the Flip was maybe around the two... No, but I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, regardless of the point, I still feel like it would have been a much bigger success if there was a normal iPhone that was folded in half, you know, like a clamshell more so than like a book. Even though I prefer the book factor because I think that's just much more unique and there's more to do, I just feel like it would have been a bigger hit right away where you could have driven up the price and you could have gotten rid of a few things. But the fact that it got smaller and you know, maybe you can do some fun colors or something like that and some, you know, market the selfie mode that would come with it where you're using your main cameras. I just think that would have done better commercially. But, you know, I'm still, we got really off topic. I know we were supposed to talk about the 18 and the price point. But like also that this all does apply. If the Ultra is going to be being the Ultra and having the best of the best or supposed to have the best of the best, how much is this memory issue going to hit that too for next year when the Ultra 2 comes?
I don't know that it will make a huge difference to that device because it will sell in low volumes and it's very expensive. So you can bet that that device will have 12 gigabytes of memory, no question.
And okay, it's so not we're already factoring that in now.
The problem is with devices that have a lot of memory, like the Mac Studio and the Mac Mini, and devices that sell in large volumes, like what the iPhone 18 will be and the MacBook Neo.
Which we should just transition into now. That was the most recent story that's all kind of ties together. So the iPhone 18, you know, some of this stuff is a shortage and memory spikes in price there, kind of trying to save costs by sharing things. The MacBook Neo's only reason why this thing is so freaking successful, besides the fact that it is a solid laptop, it is really good, is because of the price. And now we have reports that the demand is extremely high, which is great. But Apple was caught off guard by this, according to the earnings call, and now there's a potential price hike that could happen. I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that so quickly. You're going to have to eat the cost. I'm sorry.
The problem is that Apple just did not anticipate the success of this device. And there are a number of issues with it. So I think that the MacBook Neo was originally supposed to contain the A19, which would have given it 12 gigabytes of memory. But due to supply constraints, it reverted to the A18. Now, the A18s it is using, it's using A18 Pro chips. They are binned chips. These were from the iPhone 16 production cycle. But this was made with TSMC's earlier version of 3 nanometer. It since has moved on to a newer version that the A19 is based on. So essentially, the A18 Pro was out of production. It was using stockpiled binned chips, and that is what it put into the MacBook Neo. That whole supply has basically now been depleted, and that presents the problem. Because they've either got to tell TSMC to restart production using older technology even though it will still be expensive, and those chips will then be more capable because they won't be binned chips, so therefore they will be more expensive, or they upgrade it to an A19, which is also more expensive. Memory is also super expensive, especially trying to deliver a device at such a low price point. And then it's also a case of manufacturing this many devices so quickly when demand is still so high. Apple requested 5 million units and then upped that to 10 million. I mean, the numbers here are huge. It can't ship them fast enough. It's very difficult to get hold of a MacBook Neo still. So this kind of leaves Apple in an impossible position, because if it starts selling 10 million MacBooks at a loss, that is not going to be a very good business decision. They would be better off just discontinuing the device or pausing it. So I understand why they may well be driven to increase the price. And one of the ways that we're seeing is rumored that they could tackle that is to not per se increase the price, but do what they did with the Mac Mini earlier this week, which is just remove the entry-level model, remove the 256 gigabyte model, leaving only the 512 one.
I'm fine with that.
That device, they presumably make more profit on that. Fewer people will buy it, which will constrain supply or will reduce demand, rather, and makes the issue far easier to deal with. We're also seeing a rumor that to make it more palatable, Apple could introduce some new color options midway through the product cycle, which I can believe that they say, right, here is the new MacBook Neo, demand's off the charts, so we have introduced a second generation model earlier than expected. It contains an A18 Pro that is not binned, so it is slightly more powerful. Its GPU is slightly more powerful. And it has new color options, and it now only starts at $599 with Touch ID. And if that is the way they get around this problem, I think that is okay, considering that this is not their fault. They've made a product that's so popular, and then the circumstances have changed that they can't meet that price point anymore. I think that
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Acceptable outcome. It's just a bit of a shame.
So they removed the $599 and it's the $699 one only, correct?
Yes.
That's fine because that's the only one you should be buying. No offense, in my opinion. It's an extra $100. I know it sucks for a lot of people out there who say, hey, $100. And I'm not saying that $100 is not a lot of money. It absolutely is, especially in today's day and age. But if you're buying a laptop, you're expecting it to be around for quite a while. This is not something you're doing every year. That extra $100 that we all do it. We all blow $100 easily, probably on something that you shouldn't. Cut it out for a couple of months. Make it worth it because that $100 goes a long way with what you're getting. That extra storage is very important in my opinion. I still think storage, despite all the clouds that are out there and all the subscriptions, I mean, it's still very important. And you're getting Touch ID, which is in my eyes, a crucial thing. I tried the model without it. It's annoying to put in your password. And if you don't have an Apple Watch or other ways to authenticate quickly and easily, like just Touch ID is important to me. So I would personally be recommending that for the storage. And now if you're getting a non-bin down version and it's still $599, like that's, or $699, that's fine. Like that makes more sense. And you know what? Apple should just start doing the marketing thing. Make it exclusive color drops. I don't know. Say there's only going to be this much around for this. People will buy those up too. I mean, I still think that I'm looking at it right now. You've got to wait until June 1st. That's wild for the 256. Let's see what the 512 is. Same thing. So that's for the silver, the blush, citrus, indigo. They're all the same. Unavailable for in-store pickup May 22nd to June 1st. What bothers me is, how did you not anticipate that this was going to sell so well? Like, it's a $500 MacBook, for God's sakes. Like, what did you expect was going to happen?
I mean, clearly their market research did not suggest that this would be as popular as it has been. This has coincided with the supply chain shortages. And I think that had things gone to plan in the first place, then they would be using A19 Pro chips with 12 gigabytes of memory. It would still be at the same price point, and they could just ramp up production of those chips, which are used in the iPhone 17 lineup, and everything would be nice and straightforward. So it is the memory cost here, which they did anticipate, which was their reason for using an A18 Pro in the first place, I believe, that has caused this problem. And of course, it's caused chaos for the Mac Mini and Mac Studio, which realistically, we probably would have had those upgraded versions by now. But rather than getting the new version, we're just seeing the current versions just kind of fade away, whether that's storage configurations or memory configurations. It's pretty hard to get hold of a Mac Studio or Mac Mini right now. So that is also a major problem.
Yeah, I don't know. This is good. This is good conversation. I wonder what all of you guys think. I think that the phrasing for the first part that we talked about, just to recap here with the iPhone 18, like calling it a downgrade against what it could be versus calling it a downgrade, you know, against what the model that's currently in stock, those are two vastly different things. I'm okay with downgrades of what it should have been compared to, you know, if you're making it worse than the current model, which it sounds like some of the things that are rumored, at least not all of it, are just downgrades in the sense that it's not, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make, how do I phrase this? I just don't think it's as big of a deal as what it's being led on to be in terms of those specific
downgrades. The reality will be somewhere in the middle where there'll be a few features that are worse actively, but there probably won't be very many of them. And the rest of them will be just not quite where we would have liked the device to be.
Right. I'm not trying to say this is media panic because, you know, I hate when people say like, oh, you're just in the media trying to drive it up. But some of it kind of smells like a headline-ish type.
It's true. I mean, you can see it across the products here. This affects everything. We're seeing it in other industries as well. It's not just Apple that is affected by this. And the one that I personally am most disappointed by is the MacBook Ultra, because I have been waiting to upgrade my MacBook for ages. We have heard rumors about this MacBook Ultra with this OLED display for about 18 months now. We were expecting that at the end of this year. That too is now expected to be delayed until next year because of these memory shortages.
Yeah, that's a bummer. And also, is it not going to be touchscreen anymore either? Isn't that like what the current...
I hadn't heard that. Have I missed an article?
Oh, I feel like I've seen... I don't know for sure. I'm asking you because I've stopped paying attention to the MacBook Ultra in terms of like... I feel like I've heard on and off that it's not supposed to have a touchscreen anymore.
I have not heard that. I think it's 100% going to have a touchscreen.
Good. I'm fine with that because I want it to have a touchscreen.
We just might not see it for a while.
I just probably won't use it.
Especially considering that device is almost certainly going to offer crazy memory configurations and is going to be very expensive. That could well be another spring 2027 product. So we may have a very busy spring next year between the iPhone 18, the iPhone 18e, the iPhone Air 2, which will definitely be really interesting. There'll be a lot of discussion around that device, the MacBook Ultra, and who knows what else we might see. New smart home products, new iPads.
I'm telling you,
we could have an unusually busy 2027.
This isn't going to be a good start for old Turnus here if he has to delay some products right out of the gate for him, unfortunately. He better figure out a way to convince... they would never do this because it's an unreleased product, but you better figure out a way to get major reports saying that it's completely delayed now while it's still in Tim Cook's hands. He could just pass the blame off on that one. It wasn't me. I didn't do anything. Which, I mean, I guess is true. This is the Mac is his thing, so I don't know. We'll see.
I guess part of the idea, though, I think the logic behind delaying devices, whether that's the Mac Mini, Mac Studio, or MacBook Ultra, or even the iPhone 18, the whole idea is if you delay it, then you don't fail disappointments when that device is announced. It's better to hold off until you can meet expectations than announce it sooner and then fall short of them.
Yeah, but the problem is there's these websites that are really, really popular that report on, products that are upcoming that a lot of people do pay attention to. And then they read it and then they get really disappointed and mad at the websites and Apple for promising in a way that there's going to be a product coming later and then it doesn't happen.
Well, I've never heard of any website that does anything like that, Dan. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Me either. It's a real shame, honestly. But all right, let's call it there. Let's you know, open it up to discussion. Would love to hear from you guys in the comments. Hit us up, podcast@macrumors.com. And we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.